in celebrating its centennial in 2012 at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own program. This airtime is a free service offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge, talent, and passions. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed in Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Good morning and welcome to Community Spotlight. My name is Mike Honig. I do a show called Think Wing Radio where you're entitled to your own opinion, but not necessarily your own facts. My guest today is Brad Freeman. Brad has worn many professional hats, but may be best known for his criticism of election integrity issues in the USA. The Brad blog discusses voting rights and a number of other subjects related to media reform and political corruption from a progressive standpoint. On his website, Brad is often critical of Premier Election Solutions, formerly Diebold Election Systems, as well as ESNS, Sequoia Voting Systems, and electronic voting in general. Brad is a noted advocate of a return to paper balloting, and I have to say I've come to agree with him. How are you doing today, Brad?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing fine. I'm really excited to have a chance to chat with you about this. I've read a lot of your stuff from time to time, and I have to say your arguments and information are really compelling and more than a little bit scary.
I appreciate that, and I'm sorry about it.
But in a good way, I suppose. I think one of the first questions that comes to mind for me is you have all these big companies that are manufacturing these voting machines. Do these manufacturers tend to have any sort of political leanings? The people that run these companies, should we be concerned about any sort of political bias that might creep into the software or any of the other features of these devices?
Well, of course, you should be concerned about any political leanings from any direction, frankly, but there's much more to worry about than that, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, for years, most of the companies had a very right-leaning bias. Famously, back in 2004, Diebold's CEO back then, you know, had promised to deliver the state of Ohio to George W. Bush, and that's sort of what got a lot of folks' attention. But, you know, other companies like Sequoia were and still are actually related to a company, a Venezuelan company by the name of Smartmatic, which is tied to Hugo Chavez. And this was actually something that got a lot of the right-wingers to finally take notice about this concern. Ultimately, what you find is that whether it's, you know, somebody's bias from the right, somebody's bias from the left, none of it actually matters. What matters is the citizens' ability to oversee their own elections. I think it's smart to assume, no matter who is running an election, that they are not to be trusted. That, you know, we the people need to be able to oversee our own elections if we want to have real self-governance. And, you know, some of the very best election officials in the world will tell you, don't trust me. You should never have to trust me. You should never have to trust anything that you can't see with your own eyes. So I think it's smart, you know, to sort of presume that people will want to game elections. That's the history in this country. That's the history in other countries. People, if they can game elections, they will game elections. That's why you want a system that is transparent, and that's why you want a system that, whether it is, you know, run by people who favor one party over another, they can't get away with gaming the system because the people are able to oversee it. And they'll see that gaming right away. And that's the problem with electronic voting systems, is that you simply cannot see if the ballots are being counted accurately as per the voter intent.
You know, there's an old saying in business that an oral agreement isn't worth the paper it's written on. One of the things that I turned up when I was getting ready for this interview is that in Harris County, there are almost 2 million registered voters. The number I came up with is 1,937,850 registered voters.
Mm-hmm.
And in Harris County, we use eSlate. There is no paper trail of ballots cast. So are those votes worth the paper they're written on in terms of the accuracy of the count?
Well, whether they have a paper, a so-called paper trail or not, What you're talking about with the e-slate, it's akin to a touchscreen voting system. In this case, you've got a little knob that you move the cursor around the screen, but it's essentially just like a touchscreen in that it is called a direct recording electronic device, a DRE. It records the votes electronically straight to the innards of the system. And the problem is that you can have absolutely no idea if that vote has been recorded accurately to those innards, to the hard drive, to the flash drive, whatever it is that it happens to use. Faith-based voting. It doesn't matter what the little paper trail says. Even some of these machines have a little paper trail to print out. It doesn't matter what the paper trail says, because the dirty little secret is nobody counts those paper trails.
Right.
They use the internal numbers, and the internal numbers, it is strictly 100% impossible to determine that any vote ever cast on an e-slate during an election for any candidate or initiative on the ballot has ever been recorded accurately as per the voter's intent. And you can ask the manufacturers, in the case of e-slate, it's made by Hart Intercivic, you can ask them, do they have any proof, any evidence that any vote has ever been accurately recorded on one of those machines during an election, and they will be forced to admit that no, there is no proof. It is 100% faith-based voting, which is an insane way to run a democratic election, if you ask me.
Now, since the election of 2000, when we had the hanging chads, really that election seems to have been a pivotal one, not only in terms of a Supreme Court that may have stolen the election for Bush, but the fact that we went from mainly paper ballots of one sort or another to these electronic balloting systems on the theory that electronics are good, technology is good, you can't mess with technology, and of course technology is the one thing you can always mess with. The one thing you can't mess with is ink on paper.
Well, actually, you can mess with ink on paper, and it takes a much larger conspiracy to be able to do it. And if ballots are counted by hand at the precinct on election night in front of the public, it is very, very hard to change that ink on paper, at least without getting caught, and it's certainly much more difficult to change the results of an entire election without getting caught, as opposed to on electronic systems, where it takes a single person to flip an entire election, and they can do it within seconds. And you will never know, I will never know. And by the way, the Supreme Court in 2000, you know, did not probably steal the election. They most certainly did, because, you know, after the election, a consortium of news media went back and actually counted all the ballots across the state of Florida. And they found that in every, using any counting standard, hanging chads, pregnant chads, dimple chads, whatever it was, in every case, Al Gore ended up winning when you counted all the ballots across the state. So that was definitely clearly the wrong lesson, the opposite of what we should have learned. One of the problems that occurred in the 2000 election was that down in Volusia County, Florida, one optical scan machine that they were using at the time, similar to what a lot of folks are using now, it was an electronic system, an optical scan system, actually recorded negative 16,022 votes in Volusia County for Al Gore. That's negative 16,022 votes. Now, I know that in some parts of Florida, Al Gore wasn't particularly popular, but to receive negative 16,022 votes is obviously outrageous. And that was on a machine that was made by a company called Global Election Systems. They were then purchased by Diebold Election Systems, and those became the Diebold machines that were pushed out all across the country thanks to the federal Help America Vote Act in 2002. Now we're stuck with those machines. Meanwhile, the paper ballots that everybody complains about with, you know, with the chads and so forth, the problem wasn't so much with those ballots as with the fact that the Supreme Court stopped the counting of those ballots.
Right.
We could have had a legitimate election in 2000, but for the Supreme Court, who said, no, no, you can't count the ballots. You've got to go with the machine-recorded numbers, which may or may not be accurate. And that's the problem still to this day. When we use, whether it's electronic systems like you use down there in Houston, touchscreen DRE-type systems, or whether you use paper ballot, optically scanned paper ballots, you're still relying on the computer results. You do not have human beings overseeing the results to make sure that the computers are counting them correctly. And that's the message mess that we're currently in, and it's absolutely insane because we find in election after election the computers just get it wrong, that they can be gamed by bad guys, or they just fail, they just malfunction, a program design. This happens time and time again, and the only way that we ever can find that out is if we hand count those paper ballots to find out.
And very often what happens, as we found, is there is not a recount unless the election appears close. So if you're gaming the system, as long as the election is far enough apart, and I think the Wisconsin recall election is probably a great example, where you had exit polls saying it was too close to call. You had other exit polls saying among people who had voted in a theoretical matchup between Romney and Obama, 3% favored Obama, and yet Scott Walker and his lieutenant governor won by 7 percentage points. And aside from the fact that that seems highly improbable, and the fact that they both won by the same percentage, and yet the voting numbers were different, I mean, there are just so many weirdnesses there.
Yeah.
But because the difference between the winner and loser was so great, in order to have a recount, the loser would have to pay. So, as you've pointed out many times, there was never a physical count.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, I think the approval of Obama was actually higher than 3%, if I recall. But yeah, when the polls closed on election night, 8 p.m. Central Time up there in Wisconsin, all the news networks, you can go back and look at them, all the news networks were saying, oh, it's going to be neck and neck. Our exit polling shows us all day long. We've been watching. It is going to be a squeaker. It is neck and neck. It is too close to call. It is impossible to predict. Get your popcorn. We're going to be here all night. It's going to be a long night. And then within about 30 or 40 minutes, it was a landslide for Scott Walker. Now, maybe it was a landslide. Maybe the people coming out from the polling places during the day, the exit polls, not the pre-election polls, but the polls where people walk right out and tell the pollsters what they just voted for, maybe those were all wrong. Seems unlikely, but maybe they were. And maybe the optical scan computers got it right. The problem is, we don't know. We can't know. We, the people, have no idea unless we count those paper ballots. Now, by the way, I should mention that the machines they used there just a few weeks earlier in March of this year down in Palm Beach, Florida, where they used the identical machines made by Sequoia Voting System in some municipal elections down there, three races were called incorrectly by the computers. The losers were named as the winners by the computer. And the only way that anybody ever found out was that the election director down there was smart enough to start counting a few of those paper ballots by hand, and she found out, wait a minute, these numbers are all off. Well, that never happened in Wisconsin.
Correct.
So now you've got an effort, by the way, all across the state. People have made public records requests to look at those ballots before they are destroyed. They were supposed to be destroyed 2 weeks after the election, but the public records request has kept them from being destroyed, and they are now trying to go county by county to actually count those paper ballots where they are allowed, where they haven't already been destroyed, where they can afford the cost that some of these counties are charging them for these public records requests, to try to find out if the June 5th election was actually tallied correctly by the computer systems up there. They should never have to do that. That is insane that they're being charged money to count their own elections to try to determine if one of the most historic elections in the history of this country was actually recorded accurately.
You know, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, Mike Honig, and this is Community Spotlight. We'll be right back.
It is 9:43. Let's check your traffic out on I-10. The Katy Freeway inbound, there is some traffic going from Eldridge to Kirkwood. Also on the North Loop westbound from Wayside to Lockwood, you want to watch out for some congestion. On 45, the North Freeway inbound from I-10 to Allen Parkway, a bit of a slow ride. And on 45, the Gulf Freeway northbound from El Dorado to Dixie Farm Road. On the weather front, it's going to be about a high of 94 to 95 degrees. 85 right now. We will reach the 90s by noon. Then as you go into tomorrow, we're looking at a high of 93. Then Sunday, high of 91, but some scattered showers. I'm Luke Jones with the KPFT Traffic and Weather Center.
Welcome back to Community Spotlight. I'm Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. And my guest is Brad Friedman. He does the Brad blog at bradblog.com. And he is a journalist and pretty much acknowledged expert on election integrity and very pro-paper ballot and anti-digital ballot. Welcome back, Brad.
Thanks, sir.
Voter ID. Again, you and I have had this discussion, and you've talked about it a lot. Where do you tend to find the most fraud? Do you tend to find fraud in terms of people going to vote, either claiming to be citizens and not being citizens, or claiming to be somebody who they aren't? Or do you tend to find more like election fraud, where it's at the other end, at the administrative end, the counting end, the security end?
Yeah, well, there's no question that the greatest threat to election is election fraud. In other words, fraud by election insiders. That's totally different from voter fraud, which is exceedingly rare, almost never ever happens at the polling place. And that is the only thing that polling place photo ID restrictions like the ones down in Texas can possibly deter. Where voter fraud happens, it tends to be absentee fraud. And photo ID at the polling place has absolutely nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, up in Pennsylvania, where there's a trial currently over their polling place photo ID restriction, the state has admitted they are familiar with no in-person impersonation that has ever taken place in the state of Pennsylvania or in any other state. So that is a fraud in and of itself. That is the Republican Party trying to keep Democratic-leaning voters from voting, period. So the greatest concern, yes, is, you know, insider election fraud. When you can have a single person flip an entire election without detection, that's a far greater threat than one person sending in a false absentee ballot or even showing up at the polling place to cast a ballot for someone else, which they never do.
Now, that raises an interesting question that I was going to get to, and that is voter suppression as an election strategy. Now, I hate false equivalencies. I hate when people use the argument, well, the other party does it too, because it's like, well, if the other party was jumping off a bridge, would you jump off the bridge also? But, you know, to be fair, to what extent have Democrats been guilty of, and I'm talking modern Democrats, Democrats, let's say, the last 10, 20, 30 years, how often have Democrats been responsible for what appears to be voter suppression strategies and this kind of gaming of the system? Are they as bad about it as Republicans seem to be, or do they do it just a little?
Yeah, no, I'm aware, actually, of no incidents of the Democratic Party attempting to suppress anybody's vote, as opposed to the Republican Party, which it has become a national strategy. And this has been in the works for some time. We've been reporting at bradblog.com on this for about a decade. But it's really coming to a head this year, as you've got dozens of states now who are passing these polling place photo ID restrictions meant to suppress the Democratic vote. And it is Republicans who are doing it. And, you know, I will tell you, and people who follow me know, that my coverage of election integrity is nonpartisan. You know, I will go to bat for someone on the right as much as I will for someone on the left when they have been screwed by the electoral system. As a matter of fact, there was a Supreme Court justice down there in Texas some years ago who was really screwed by these machines, who received zero votes in one county, by the way, a conservative Supreme Court judge. I was more than happy to go to bat for him. So I'm not partisan when it comes to covering elections. However, I agree. False equivalency is nonsense, and there is just a plain fact that Republicans right now are trying to keep legal voters from being able to cast their legal vote, period. That's what they're doing down there. That's what they're doing down in Texas. And y'all are very lucky, frankly, that Texas is covered by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, because that so far has allowed the Department of Justice to put the kibosh on this horrible Republican bill meant to keep Democratic voters from voting in the great state of Texas.
Now, that's another good point. The fact that Section 5, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act applies to essentially the old Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting that now a lot of the problems are not in the old Confederacy. They're in the North. And it's almost like you're wishing, gee, I wish they had made that bill to apply to all states, regardless of what their history is or where they're located. And do you think anything will happen to correct that oversight in the law at some point?
Well, the law actually does apply to every state in the Union. And much as I was, you know, I'm happy to laud the Department of Justice for stopping the photo ID law down there in Texas under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. The fact is, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act applies to every single state, including those that aren't, like Texas has to get pre-clearance from the Department of Justice for any new election laws because of their long history of discrimination down there. But the fact is, voting laws cannot be discriminatory, and the Department of Justice can and should be challenging all of these photo ID restriction laws under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, and they are absolutely failing to do that. Eric Holder has been a failure and is shameful that he has not gone into some of these other states that are not covered by Section 5, states like Wisconsin, Tennessee, Kansas, to challenge those polling place photo ID laws. Now, for the first time, just last week, we learned that the Department of Justice is looking at the photo ID law in the state of Pennsylvania, and they may be challenging that photo ID law in Pennsylvania under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Finally, thank God. In the meantime, a lot of these laws are being challenged at the state level. The Pennsylvania law is being challenged at the state level as a violation of the state constitution. I suspect those people challenging that law will win, and that this law will be overturned on the state level in Pennsylvania because the state simply doesn't have a case. They've conceded that they are familiar with no in-person voter fraud at the polling place. But the DOJ really needs to be a lot more proactive in every single state in the union to protect the lifeblood of our democracy.
And, of course, with national elections, the general just under 100 days away, we don't have tons of time to get this done. I have, I think, one or two what I consider the big questions, and we're getting close to the end of the show for today. Can we trust our elections these days? And is it time to consider internationally monitored elections for the U.S., if for nothing else, to validate our system to the point where people may not agree with the outcome, but at least believe the outcome?
Well, two great questions. One, no, you cannot now, nor should you ever, simply trust your elections. If you cannot oversee them, they should not be trusted. And that's why we need hand-counted, hand-marked paper ballots, hand-counted at the polling place on election night in front of all the public, all the parties, the video cameras, with the results posted at the precinct before ballots move anywhere. Then you might actually be able to trust your elections because you're actually able to oversee the counting. So, no, you shouldn't trust your election. The second part of your question, as far as international monitors, I don't care whether they're international monitors, internal monitors, teams of thousands of attorneys, as the Democratic Party likes to say.
I would trust Canadians to do the monitoring.
I wouldn't. Here's why. You cannot monitor an electronically counted ballot.
Yes.
Period. It is absolutely insane that in 2012, you guys down there in Harris County are still using 100% faith-based voting machines that cannot be overseen. I don't care how many people are watching. You simply cannot tell if a vote recorded on DRE voting system has been recorded accurately. It is scientifically impossible. And the same is really true of paper ballot optical scan systems unless you count them by hand. So, you know, Jimmy Carter Center, who monitors elections all across the country, has actually said, no, we would never come in and monitor elections in the United States because of the way the systems are run. There are no standardized systems across the country. You cannot oversee electronic voting. So, you know, they have said that they wouldn't even participate. So it doesn't matter. We can bring in the world to watch, but unless we can actually see what's going on, none of that monitoring actually matters.
We're running out of time today. Brad, it's been really interesting and scary, and I hope we'll have a chance to have a conversation about voting and elections again. I want to thank you so much. You can be read on bradblog.com. You do some great work. And, of course, you can read my stuff on thinkwingradio.com. I have a lot of original pieces there and occasionally refer to Brad as well. I thank you all for listening today. I hope you found it informative and scary enough that we might think about what we're doing in terms of our elections. Thanks so much, Brad, for joining me.
My pleasure. Great to be back on KPFT.
Well, we've enjoyed having you and hope to have you again. You take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Community Spotlight here on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, and I'll look forward to seeing you again.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves. Visit KPFT.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Undercurrents coming up at 10, followed by Wide Open Spaces at 11. And thank you for tuning in today to Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
Thanks to the ceaseless work of KPFT's engineers, we've been able to restore a much stronger signal for our regular broadcast channel at 90.1 FM and for our HD channels as well. However, we still need to lightning-proof our transmission chain by replacing our antenna, transmitter, and other equipment. Our Lightning Capital campaign is ongoing, and the $45,000 plus that so many have donated has given KPFT a decided head start towards the first phase of lightning proofing, which will include replacing our current antenna. Please consider making a special donation to the KPFT Lightning campaign to help us get over this challenge to our budget and keep free speech radio alive in Houston. Visit kpft.org to make a donation today. Again, that's kpft.org to lightning proof your community radio station. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio, KPFT.org, Twitter.com/KPFT, Facebook.com/KPFT Houston.
As long as we have hope, prayer, and a little bit of time to get us there. Hope, prayer, and time. As long as we have hope.
World Wildlife Fund, working around the world to build a future where people live in harmony with nature.
We are ordinary people.
For more than 40 years, World Wildlife Fund has achieved lasting conservation results by working with local governments, communities, businesses, and scientists to save wildlife and wild places. Please help us save the world's most endangered animals and places. Go to worldwildlife.org today. Thank you.
Recently, it's been reported that HSBC Bank has been caught for laundering proceeds for international terrorists, drug cartels, and various gangs to make a buck. This is from the Guardian newspaper, one of the real newspapers with real reporters.
I recognize that there have been some significant areas of failure. I have said before, and I will say again, despite the best efforts and intentions of many dedicated professionals, HSBC has fallen short of our own expectations and the expectations of our regulators. This is something that a bank seeking to conduct business in the United States and globally must acknowledge, learn from, and most importantly, take steps to avoid in future. As I have thought about the structural transformation of the bank's compliance function, I recommended to the group that now is the appropriate time for me and for the bank for someone new to serve as the head of group compliance.
In retrospect, we did not adequately appreciate the concerns being raised about the business environment in Mexico. While we did our best to deal with these inquiries, I'm sorry to say that I did not understand what later became apparent. With the benefit of hindsight, it is now clear that we did not perceive the extent of the anti-money laundering deficiencies and the risk present in Mexico.
The recent commitments are welcome. Apologies and commitments to improve are also welcome. But accountability for past conduct is essential. And that's what's been missing here.
We overhauled our AML compliance function, improving the quality, coverage, and strength of our AML program through additional staffing and training. We have increased spending in AML compliance ninefold from 2009 to 2011. And today, we have 892 full-time AML compliance professionals.
Turns out HSBC was laundering billions of dollars for terrorists and Mexican drug cartels and big U.S. gangs and, well, international gangs all over the place trying to make a buck. Last time this happened, it was Wachovia Bank that got caught big time, $300 plus billion, And they got fined about $140 million, way less than a tenth of a percent penalty for what they did. In the meantime, nobody got arrested. Nobody went to jail. And don't you just have to wonder who's laundering the money today? We're trying to get some guests to come in and talk about this situation, but it turns out those who know the most want to speak the least. But we'll keep on trying. In the meantime, please contact your elected officials. Tell them this drug war is a fiasco. Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
Rain or shine. This is the station to listen to anytime. You're listening to Houston's very own listener-sponsored commercial-free radio, 90.1 FM, KPFT.